I'm gonna give a rundown of Big Bang, and we'll fill in details on that. I wanna tell you some of the pitfalls in trying to make a machine. You can't hear me. I'm not loud enough. Can everybody hear me? Okay. I probably won't be able to hear you because I have a hearing loss. All right. We decided to make Big Bang Bar a little over 2 years ago. I bought a machine, paid $19,000 for it, which my wife thought I hadn't only paid $1,900 for, but it turned out it was $19,000. So we could take it apart and make patterns and check everything because there's not a lot of paperwork and things on it. Most of it was destroyed when Capcom moved and things. So we brought the machine down here to Texas, and we had 176 people play it at a dollar a play, and we donated that money to the Humane Society down here. Then we took it to the Chicago show, and we had 415 people approximately play it at a dollar a play, and we donated that to Make-A-Wish Foundation. We made the statement that if we had 50 people or so interested in the machine, we had boards and things, we thought we could make it just by putting some of them together and doing some odds and ends and a little artwork. Well, it didn't turn out that way. We had enough boards. We had that stuff. We had to start, and I shouldn't say from scratch, but we had to start by figuring a game plan of what we were going to do. All right, so we took the machine apart. Kerry Stairs, Fred, myself, a couple of people, we completely stripped the game down, just a pile of parts. So then we started going to different companies to make the parts for us. We went to Chicago Gaming and Churchill Cabinet, and they agreed to make our cabinets and playfield because they did the original ones anyway. We thought they would have the artwork and stuff. Well, they didn't. So after looking at the game, the first decision I made was Stan did a nice job on the artwork, but it didn't go to the edge of the wood. When you put decals and things on, and we elected to go decals rather than silkscreen. I did. We decided that we would enlarge the artwork. Now, I'm going to give you a lot of figures and money as we go along, and you'll see how I arrived at my end figure. We paid $4,500 to have an artist extend the artwork an inch on the top, inch on the side, inch on each end. That made the characters a little bigger. It made the glow colors a little more vivid, but it also went to the edge and over the side and made it fit better and just made it look better. We then started on the play field. So we had the play field, so we had it routed, a new one, so we had an exact copy to work off of. Well, for them piddling around with 200 play fields, it's a drop in the bucket. They do Stearns play fields, which is 12,000 a year or more. So we were pushed to the back burner. It took us 9 months to get the play fields and the cabinets. And then, because I was an unknown company, they don't give you credit. You got to pay for them in advance, right, or as you pick them up. So this went along. So that kind of put the project on hold because we didn't have anything to really do yet. So then we went to a company, and this one I can't name because they went broke. And they were going to make our wire harnesses and things for us. Now, you just heard a designer up here talking a little while ago. Now, this next statement I'm going to say, he's probably going to laugh about. When you put wire in a machine, there's a lot of wire in a machine, and it's all color-coded. Like, I'm going to use orange. You have orange with a red trace, a white trace, a blue trace, a purple trace, a green trace, brown, and on and on. They wired it all the same one. Really made it work good. We didn't catch it after they made eight of them. But then the lights all came on at once. So therefore, we had to do that one over, which they were not too happy about. So then they screwed up a couple of play fields. They drilled a hole through one. The people who were assembling the play field, you have a lot of different length screws in them. All right, so if you have a screw that goes in a particular place or through an appliance or a mechanism, it might not be as long as the other ones, or it might be shorter. So if the screws are going to be put on under the play field, you have to lay all of them out and you have to spray paint them. That way, when they pick them up, they know they got the right color. All those screws that are orange or all of them that are black are the right colors, one for the bottom, one for the top. Got that ironed out. Then we started ordering parts. Some of the people that ordered parts for me, for some reason, Capcom, on the head when it folds down, the hole through the side of the cabinet, there is a bushing in there, but there's also a bushing from the other side, and then a bolt goes through it and a nut. Four pieces to do a simple operation. So when my people ordered parts, we were going to make 200 machines, they ordered 200. They forgot there's two sides to the machine. So we didn't catch that one until we were halfway through the production, decided or found out we didn't have enough things to put it together. So we went to a model shop there in Bloomington, and the man used black nylon and made both the bushings and everything together. Much better fit, much better, plops right in, put the bolt through, and it's done. So that's one thing we changed. We've made other changes along the way, and I'm not going to hit them in sequence, but I'll hit them as we go along. The tube dancer, which is one of the main attractions of the game. All right, when they originally made the tube dancer, they made it out of silicone and tinted it. Okay, well, over the years, if you see an original Big Bang bar, you'll see the legs drag on the floor. Okay, so I decided I would go to some different tool companies, model makers. I talked to George Gomez, and he told me about this company downtown in Chicago that he'd worked with. So I went down and I took my original little green girl, and I asked him how much they would charge me to make 200 of them. We'll have to do this, we'll have to do that. And he said, $96,000. And I said, I don't want one that bad. And I said, how would you go about doing this? And he said, hell, I'll just give you one. Come to find out, he was one of the companies that bid on it, but he made his model when he made it in gray and hard as a rock. No bounce, no give, no nothing. It wouldn't have danced anyway. So then we got to talking to some different people, and Patrick Chow's name come into the subject, and he says, yeah, I know the guy's got the mold for that. I said, okay, how do I find him? Well, I don't know his name, and I don't know where he lives, but I'll try to find him. So we made a lot of phone calls and looked around on that, and we never did find the guy, but we did find something out that happened. The man who originally made the models and did all the stuff for that and the aliens and other things, we finally tracked him down and found out who he was. And I kept trying to call, and I dialed afternoons and evenings for a couple of weeks. Never did get anybody. Phone just rang, no answering machine or nothing. So I finally, one evening, I called, and a guy answered. I said, I'm looking for this man. And he said, well, what do you need him for? I said, well, he was the artist for Capcom stuff, and I'm going to try to make some parts. And I said, I'm sorry, you're out of luck. He died 2 weeks ago. I said, what did you do with his artwork and stuff? And he's built. He said, well, we threw it all away. Okay, now the sequence is starting to fit in place. This is how these people got these rubber molds. There was two or three of them. There's dolls out there that are green, dark green, light green, gray, and a pinkish red. What they did when they made them, they made a rubber mold about like so, two parts that comes apart, and they cast them one at a time. So I took this gray doll that I borrowed off these people, and I went to a model shop out in Darren, Illinois, and I said, what can you make these for me for? And they said, oh, probably $50 a piece. And I said, okay, make me a couple of them. Well, you got to pay for the molds. I said, I understand that. So I paid for two molds. And they showed up with them, and they came out, they were just like white silicone. I said, this is not really what we're after. We want something that's going to be a little more rigid, but it still has to dance, and I don't want it to sag. They said, well, we can do you a lot better than that. We'll make it the color you want, the other green, and said, we can make it so it'll glow in the dark. I said, well, that's a novelty to add. Okay, let's do that. And I said, will the legs sag? And they said, well, no, not necessarily. I said, well, we're going to change something. We're going to make the adjustment in there on the pin a little longer so it can be moved if we have to. So they made our molds, our dolls for us. Then we even got the bright idea, because I have a blonde wife, or I got the bright idea, we had some of the dolls made up suntan and blonde. Which one of them will be on my machine, and one on the doctor's machine. So that was just one more thing. Next thing as we went along, the green tube. Well, the green tube, we couldn't find anybody that had the plastic for it. So I went to some major plastic companies, one here in Texas, one in Chicago, and one in Ohio or somewhere. And I said, this is what I've got. And finally, I brought the one up to Chicago. I brought the tube. I said, can you duplicate this? He said, yeah, we made that. We had no list of who made anything. So I said, okay, how much? 200 of them. And he said, well, we don't make stuff anymore. We're going to have to order the plastics, and it comes from Canada. I said, okay, you're going to have to cut the length? He said, no, they come 6-foot lengths, and we'll cut them. Fine. That took a couple of months to get those. We got those, and then they had to get another man to mill them. And I said, can't you laser cut them? Well, they didn't want to do that. So they ended up being milled like the original ones. So we got that. Now, I'm kind of compiling things together, and I hope you're all following me. Over this 2-year period, we knew there was a lot of things we were going to need. The next one I'm going to hit on is the light fixture. Okay, the light fixture goes in the head and holds the fluorescent tube. So we got those in, paid for them, put them on the shelf. When it came time to start putting them together, bent the wrong way. The light's behind the bracket. Don't light too well that way. We kept going along, and we seen there was other parts that we had to have. We went to a lot of the original companies that we tracked down that made the parts, and most of them weren't interested in making 200 of something. These are factories. Job shops is who we ended up using a lot of the stuff going to. When we progressed along, I'm going to skip up the grounding plate that goes in the head. All right, they're relatively expensive, but of course they didn't have the tooling. I had to pay $1,500 to have the tool made that makes a little dimple. And we ordered 185 of them. They made them, come in on a pallet, skin wrap, so we put that under a rack and just left it. Now when we got down towards the end, we're putting them together, we're 10 short. We only had 175, but I paid for 185. And so we had to pay $1,090 to make 10 more of them. The arrows, on most of the original Big Bangs, the arrows don't work, or they're burned out, or the wires are broken. I said to myself, I'm going to make this better. So I contacted some companies. We found a company in Indiana who said they could make it. I said, well, can you make these so they work on 12 volts instead of the 470? Because with 470, you put your fingers around on the ramp, you get tingled. They said, oh yeah, no problem. So they worked on this for about a month, and they come back with us. They brought a little black box about so big, it plugged in, and put out 12 volts. All right, fine. The arrows were light sometimes. Sometimes they'd be dim. Sometimes one would be bright, two would be dim. Next time two might be bright and one dim. So there went about $15,000 down the drain. So then we're back to square one on the arrows. So now we've got to make the arrows. They're around 50 bucks a piece. Then we had to make the board. There wasn't none of the boards to power the arrows. What did it cost? 100 bucks a piece somewhere? Somewhere around $100 a piece. And plus some engineering costs on that. So every time we would go to do something, there was another added expense, or there's another problem, or there was a holdup. And I don't want people to think we've been putting them off, because we've been working on this. And my bookkeeper is sitting back there, and to the nearest of our collections right now, we're about $300,000 over the original budget of what we charged for. So you hear people say now, that makes the game about $6,500. I said, yeah, that's pretty close. That's probably what I should have charged in the first place, but I didn't. I went down through the materials that I had and what I thought I could make it for without no profit or anything, and I came up with $4,500. A great concept, it just didn't work. So we continued along. Right now, we've got the coil bobbins on order right now. We've got flipper plates, the link, and a couple other minor things, and a couple of wire harnesses to touch up. Now we'll have those in the next 2 weeks, we hope. Then we will finish up the run. The games are done for practical purposes. A good percentage of them are in the boxes, the rest of them are still sitting on dollies. But we have to put some parts in them. And then Fred has to test them out. They have to be life tested. Then we got to do touch up. We're going through every machine and touching up anything it takes and correcting anything, playing it, adjusting. Another little problem we had, it wasn't expensive, but it was a time. The aliens that spit the balls out for multi-ball. That was one of the molds that the man who died was destroyed. So we went to a model maker, a and you've probably seen a lot of his model makers work. He makes these dragons, these die-cast dragons and all this. He does the model work for them and for TV shows and other things. Very good artist. So he decided he was going to give us a good price on them, which he did. So he got a company to mold them, and then he got some college students to paint them. That didn't work out. We still do not have all of our aliens. He paints them in the evening while he's watching TV, but he does a fantastic job. Then, when we put the aliens into the machine, they always don't spit the ball out. Sometimes when they turn, the ball rolls out. So Fred and Dave come up with this. They take the alien and they put a little drop of paint back in the mouth of it. And they'll let that set for a day or two, and then they'll try it again. Sometimes it takes three or four coats, but now it works correctly. The ramp, the original ramp that engineers at Capcom made was kind of a trial and error. They made a mold for it, but it wasn't correct. One, it was quarter inch off in length. Secondly, where the ball comes into the, what I call the K unit, it didn't roll over the switch correctly. Sometimes it would kind of hang up on the switch. So they had taken, or the man who had my machine, I don't know which, had taken a piece of 16th inch plastic, about 4 inches long, cut it, and glued it onto the side of the ramp, which that made it work correctly. The ball didn't hang up. So we went out to Northern Plastics, who makes most of the ramps for, well, they did for Williams Ballet and everything. And I said, Bob, what can we do about this? He said, well, first of all, we're going to have to make a reverse mold. And I said, okay. I said, you gonna make this out of body filler, or are you gonna make it out of wood, or what? He said, well, we'll try to make the wood one first. So they called in a model shop, and they made the wood mold in reverse off of the plastic one for about $1,500. And he said, now, we can't use that to mold off of, because that's the reverse mold. So now we gotta make the aluminum mold that's water-cooled. That was $15,000. Yeah. And every time we had to get tooling or something, it's, again, the people didn't want to mess with a small run. We, on the wire harnesses, we went to another company and they bid on the wire harnesses. They were going to have all of our wire harnesses done by last December. Well, they still got a few of the small ones to do yet. They're working on them though. But right now it looks like somewhere in the near future, we were really shooting for April. We might make it, we might not. It's going to be close. We did get caught up into this, is it Rocha?
Rojas,
the soldering thing in Europe. And we had to push those people's games through, get them done, and ship them by July before the end of it. And we got that done. One man had a forklift hit his, and the insurance company still has not settled with him, I don't think. When he does, then we're going to ship him the parts to get him going. Let's see. What else troubles we had?
Oh, where do we start?
Well, give me one. Let's pick on one.
Well, we can go back to your panel for the back box.
Yeah.
When the boys tested the cabinet out.
Yes.
Yeah.
The cabinet makers made the cabinet done a little extra job. They put little gossets in it. Well, the little gossets wouldn't let the plate go into it. So we had to take all the plates down to a sheet metal shop there in Bloomington and have them trimmed down by a quarter inch all the way around. Yep. What else?
Well, I don't know. Board set smoke kind of sticks in my mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, that happens.
Just because somebody puts a connector on.
On the wrong way. They soldered the wires on. They put some of the connectors on the wrong way.
Lots of smoke there.
And for some reason, we lost a lot of parts. Not accusing anybody of stealing or anything else. We are pretty sure that one of the kids we had working for us, when he was sweeping and cleaning up, we had a box with 16 completed ramps in it. We can't find those 16 ramps nowhere. We think they ended up in the dumpster. And when they would drop parts on the floor, they'd stay there or get lost.
Swap up and throw them away.
Yeah. That's some of the reason we have to reorder things. But all in all, we've had nothing but positive response on the machine. The people who played it and seen it, it's working out great. I'm going to stop my talking. Has anybody got a question at this point of anything they would like to know or gripe, bitch, or complain? There's the first one.
It's neither a great pitch or a complaint, though.
Huh?
I didn't mean to disappoint you.
No, I'm teasing.
In the original Tube Dancer, I saw a thread that in your machine, it was actually threaded backwards so that as she danced, did it? Was that true that it actually kept drilling a hole up through her? Or
no.
So did you have
no.
That? Oh,
okay. It's a wire that goes up in there, and then there's an adjustment on it that we can set it where we want it. To my knowledge, it didn't go. Now, what you're saying, though, might be true on the older machines due to the fact it was a soft silicone.
On my machine,
when I got it back to Bloomington and we started taking it apart and stuff, her feet were dragging on the bottom of the plastic. And that would be what you're saying, the screw or the wire would have worked up in her. And to my collection, when they made Big Bang at Capcom, they hand-built every one of them. There was no production. They made the parts and stuff and hand-built it. True, they took a lot of the parts from the other machines, but all the special stuff they handmade. Okay, anybody else? Okay. What else did we do?
It's a blur. There's been
it's kind of a blur, okay.
About how many people here have a machine?
Beg your pardon?
I'm curious as to how many people here have ordered Big Bang Bar machines. I mean, just like to get an idea as to how many people in the room actually are machine owners.
Six, seven?
Shoot them. Hang them.
Yeah, for you people who did order the machine, come down by our booth. I've already done this for a couple of them, but we have the assembly team here. The four guys that are working are the men who actually put it together and tested it and stuff. And we'll take a flyer and sign it. All of us will sign it for you.
Who wants a seller's machine?
Huh? Okay, that brings something else to mind.
Who wants a seller's machine?
Okay, we sold the machines for $4,500. We have had numerous people want to be added onto the list. We also have a lot of people who figured they were going to make money on this, and maybe that was their anticipation in the first place. But their rights have been sold to other people for $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. So at $10,000 right now, that's what most of them are probably going to be for sale on the internet or something afterwards, or more. I don't really know on that, but I've turned down, well, we had over 40 people on the waiting list that wanted to get onto it. And let's see where it goes. We got these two machines down here now, and we have one more that we haven't finished putting together yet. And that will make our total 175. Now, afterwards, we're going to try and don't nobody come up to us and say, I want to buy one. We're going to do something.
Raffle?
Huh?
Raffle.
Raffle them off?
That's been suggested.
Okay.
It's
probably helpful.
We had 191 computer boards when we started. Fred just said something about smoking a little while ago. Well, we've had a lot of problems. Right now, we have 77 boards. We have no extras. Now we are toying with not us for company, but the company who made or has done our play fields now and putting them together and doing our wire harnesses and the soldering and all that, which is a regular assembly company that works for Motorola. He's approached us that he would like to make a machine. All right, the next logical machine in the sequence of this is Kingpin. All right, I got a lot of the things for Kingpin. Our stymied point right now is the boards, because they have a special chip in with a program. And we found out that a company has the code to burn that chip in, and I'm not a chip expert, but there's a little chip, not so big, so thick, that has like 40 pins on each side of it. And it's been explained to me, maybe not correctly, but when a signal goes through it, it burns the little wires or the contacts out inside of it and makes that chip work for that particular function. But yet Capcom's, and I'll throw something else in here, I'm sure all of you know Williams Valley is about PIC chips. Okay. PIC chips was a different situation where it was done with a computer on the assembly line and by the code number of the machine that was made, the model of the machine, and the code number of the machine, if it was 1,000 through 2,000, they made 2,000 chips, and they would only work on that machine. Okay. That seemed to disappear too, but we ended up with a computer for that. Now, back to Capcom. We found out that this chip does the same function for all of the games, all of them they made. But then you got to work with the burned ROM chip to make it work correctly. Cheapest bid we've got right now is $25,000 to re-engineer, and then probably $400 to $500 a board. We have quite a few of the boards, sound boards and other things. We have 300. Some other ones we have 100, 190 of one board or something. So some of them we're going to have to redo, but they're going to be simpler. The one company right now has one of our boards that the chip was burned out on and smoked, Gerald. And they're sanding it down layer at a time to find out where all the traces and everything goes. We will know probably in 30 to 60 days on that. We are not giving them the go-ahead to go ahead on making the boards until we're sure they can do it. Because in this course, they want money up front, which I understand that. So we have to coordinate all of this and decide how we're gonna go with Kingpin. I've had people say they play Kingpin, they like it better than the others. Now, Kingpin is another peculiar machine. Supposedly, there was only 7 of them made, or 6, or maybe 9. Nobody seems to know. I'm under the assumption that there was only 6 made. One was destroyed in a fire, and the man's one that was destroyed in the fire also had a Big Bang bar. He was the first man to put his money in. As soon as he heard we were doing it, he had his money in for Big Bang. So right now there's a lot of ifs. Our main concern right now is to finish Big Bang, get them in the boxes and get them shipped, because there's a lot of people who've been very patient waiting. And I feel bad that we had to ship them to Europe, but it held us up a while, and if something had to be done, or those people would probably never got theirs. So let's go in there. Any question now?
If you've got all the molds and patterns and have done a lot of re-engineering, rework on Big Bang parts, why wouldn't you go in and produce? And you would think you don't have the upfront money to make molds now, or you know, you could spread it over your machine. So would you ever consider?
The only mold I had to make was RAM. Everything else is metal stampings or something. Most of it ended up being job shop stuff. Now, in the case of Williams, I bought all the artwork, all the molds, all the tooling and everything back to the 60s. I've got a warehouse that's 25 times bigger than this room, 24,000 feet, and it's got a lot of stuff in it. And we keep finding people who have molds. I'm going to get over to Williams for a minute. Williams, if they were going to make a part or something, they might have 3 or 4 companies bid on it. And they would have a company, I'm going to say they kind of led people. They wouldn't pay for the molds a lot of times. Or they might pay for the molds and then want you to reduce the price and the parts. Good business. Okay? But they would go to maybe 3 or 4 companies and have them bid on the same part. And they might buy 50 from one company, 100 from another, 500 from another, and 5 from the last one or something. And each one of these companies would bid on it, and they would give a breakdown on what they would be able to make the parts for them. So therefore, they got a kind of a broad spectrum of what people were charging, how much the tooling was and everything. And then they went that way. So I would say it really probably was smart business, but a lot of the little people got screwed on it. Okay. Back to Capcom. The companies, as far as I know, Capcom never burned anybody by leaving products sitting or not paying for it, even though they took a major bath when they went out of business. But parts of the reasons that Capcom went out of business was, one, Williams was after them on lawsuits. Lawsuits on the boards, lawsuits on patent infringement. They went to their distributors and said, if you buy Capcom, we won't sell to you, and that's standard. They tried to muscle Stern out a long time ago that way, back in the early 90s, somewhere in there. And Gary had financial trouble, but he had troubles, but he overcame it. And I've got to give Gary Stern credit for what he's done. He survived when all the rest of these companies went down the drain. There's 10 companies went down the drain in the last 15. Well, LNG, Capcom went out in 95, 96. Premier Gottlieb, 98, 99. Williams closed in 99. And Sega then went out and became Stern Pinball then. So there's five or six companies right there in a bunch. Any question now?
I'm just curious about how you felt about the people who are trying to make a profit off of the machines.
It's free enterprise.
All so you're not bothered by it?
I'm all for them. And I've got no qualms about that. I've got $300,000 over what I intended. Luckily, I've got the money, and we've got it done. We're going to have the satisfaction of finishing it.
So that means your next game, though, will probably...
Huh?
If you do something again, your next game would probably...
Georgie has got something.
That's your answer right there.
No more game.
Is that how you got the hearing problem, Georgie?
No, when we get this all done, she's done all the paperwork, all the phone calls, all the faxes, all the correspondence, keeping up on everything, and she loses her job, even though she's the president of all four of our companies. She loses her job on that part, and I have to take her to Hawaii. But I'm kind of looking forward to that. And she even slipped one in on me the other day. I can go to Roswell this summer if I want to. That's been a joke for years. Okay, next.
Gene, do you have access to a kingpin should this other company elect to make him? Because obviously, wouldn't you need it?
I have the registered trademark, yes. Is that what you're asking?
Access to a kingpin? Wouldn't you need a kingpin to re-engineer, reverse engineer, similar to what you did at the Big Bang Bar?
I hope so. I don't know. We're working on that. We could do it without it. But it would make it a lot easier. That's why I bought the Big Bang Bar to take it apart.
Yeah.
Because we got all the parts, all that stuff, except for the special made things. I'm just going to say we're taking one step at a time. Right now we're working on the board. If we can't do the board, it won't fly. That's just impossible. I've talked to Gary Stern about if he could take his boards, his CPU board and stuff, and he said, well, if I made the game for you, I'd have to re-engineer so much stuff and everything. And now I'm going to say something here again. When I started to make all this, I went to Gary Stern. I said, Gary, what could you make me 200 of these games for? He said, probably $600,000. And I should have took the offer. But that's hindsight. You're shaking your head, no. Why do you say that? Because it wouldn't have been the quality.
No.
I'm not knocking Gary's quality. Gary's answer to that is, just like on the playfields and everything, he makes a commercial pinball machine to put out on the market to sell to the route men, not the collectors, some to the home markets, where if he was to take the troubles we do, and I'll go through his playfield in just a minute, to make something, his cost would probably add $1,000 a machine or more. All right. A playfield sounds like a simple thing. You start off with a piece of board, okay? All right, first of all, you gotta pay extra for that board because it has to be cut to size. It has to be a certain type of veneer on it. It has to be cross-glued inside, and it has to be pressed. Then it has to be bound and set for a while. Then when you get that board, you check it over, then you take it to your router man, they route the holes out. In the meanwhile, you've ordered the plastics. Now you've got the plastics, they take that down to glue the plastics into the board. Then it has to be sanded. And we tried sanding some of them with DAs and belt sanders and stuff. That'll work too great. We went to Churchill Cabinet. Now they've got a big belt sander that's so wide, and it's from the wall to here, and it goes bound in a big loop. And they put the board on a table, and the man takes like an iron, and he sets down on his belt, and he walks along over the board, and it sands it. Well, when they did Funhouse for us, Adam's Family, we thought it was kind of funny. There were streaks in the boards, and they were melting the plastics. Now, that's not noticeable to anybody after they make it in a silk screen because it doesn't show up then. But we've seen something was wrong there. So the Amish people, about 90 miles below where Bloomington is, make cabinets and tabletops and things. And they have a belt sander that is 4 foot wide and has triple belts in it. It's got a big belt here, big belt here, big belt here. Roller track, when it goes through, it's on a chain drive and what's known as a plenum that holds the board down. So it sands it even all over. They can take 5 thousandths off, 3 thousandths and 1 thousandths all in one pass. Okay, they run all the boards through. If one of them still has the plastic, you can feel the plastic up, they go back, they take another 1,000ths off, they run it through. This gets expensive too, because this is time and material. But when it comes done there, the boards are smooth, plastics are smooth. Now, then we have the next thing, and I've heard people voice opinions about chipping play fields, not ours, but chipping play fields. I'll leave it at that. We take, when that board comes back, where all the router holes and everything has went through, they're splintering. So I take two, I have two men, we have a sanding room set up, and they take sometimes dermal tools, sometimes by hand, sometimes with power tools or files, and they go along and take all the burrs. Now we're on the bottom of the play field. We take all the burrs and things loose. Then, and I'll give any of you an invitation, if you want to come down and feel some of the last three play fields we've made, run your fingers around them, they're smooth. Then we put one coat of polyurethane. Now I'm going to give you three different names in a few minutes and you'll see where this goes from. We use polyurethane on the back of the play field, usually one coat. Now if it comes out looking too shiny or we still got problems, we de-sand the back of that board. Then we put another urethane coat on. Then they go into the drying rack for a day or two. They're wheeled across the hallway to our paint booth and paint room. We then take and put a coat of polyester on. Now, polyester is a two-part material, but it's not epoxy. It's adheres well to the wood, it tooths into the wood and makes a good grip and fills any voids. All right, we take a look at that play field then, and if we elect that it looks pretty good, we give it a second coat. Then we DA sand that down. Then we start looking for imperfections. And I'm gonna jump ship here for a minute. When we made Funhouse, we had some problems with register and things around the clock where there was little nicks and dents. We learned from that. Now we do three coats. So we go, now we go sanded. Now after the second coat, if we still got some dimples or a hole, we'll take an eyedropper and we'll make drops on where it is. Then we'll give it the third coat and then sand the whole thing smooth. At that point, we have a very smooth flat board that's probably within 2 or 3 thousandths of being level all over. So when we take it to our silk screeners, it's as smooth or as good as if they're working on the desktop piece of glass or something. Then we have it silk screened. We then grade them. If they're bad, they become seconds. If they're good, we still coat them and go through with it, but then we got a finished product. And I'll invite any of you down if you want to look at it. We've now done the second run on Funhouse. We have 8-Ball Deluxe there, and we just got Kiss back last week. Again, any of you who would like to come look, the boards that we're selling for $500 are seconds. We're not going to beat around the bush and tell you they're not, but I'm going to offer you the opportunity to come look at it, and you can pick out the best one you want, and I'm going to tell you they grade as good as first, but they've got, all of them have something wrong with them. We have three people grade these boards, myself, my daughter, and our painter, Adam. And we look for, we know what we're looking for. We're looking for where there's a drop off, or there's a change in color, or the screen might have moved a little bit. We had a company in Indiana do some silk screening for us on some other things in the past. And we did 220 boards, 187 of them in seconds. So we don't do business with that company anymore, okay? But anyway, it's an invitation for any of you who want to come look at it. Next question.
Would you consider making wizard blocks?
Would you consider?
I want you to turn around and look at my wife. Turn around. I'm going to get to something. Where he's going back and forth. No, I will not make another pinball machine. I will license somebody. And that's what we're doing with, I'm going to say Jerry for right now, with the guy that runs the Motorola company. He will make them. But we will do the play fields, the cabinets, the parts, and that kind of stuff in the ordering. But we will not manufacture it. And now Wizard Block, yes, I own all the patents on Wizard Block. I own all the patents on Pin Game 2000, and also I have the registered trademark on the name. So that's not so far-fetched.
So you would kind of be the OEM, and somebody else would assemble all the pieces, if that ever were to come?
Well, that's what they're doing now. After the first company went broke, or went out of business, whatever you want to call it, we lost a lot of parts there. Some of them we never found. All right, so Jerry came in through the, he's part of a 8-unit company group, and he was recommended to us, so he came into the picture, and he straightened out our wire harness stuff. He set up, we made some Lazy Susans, rotisseries like, and he started assembling. Now, some of his workers have made mistakes. We got play fields that got holes through them. Some of where the screws are wrong, we got a dimple in it, so now that's their expense. Take care of that. Going ahead, before we go any farther, we've got to solve the problem of the boards. Can't make them without the boards. Just no other way. A lot of you are knowledgeable on this. When they made Pin Game 2000, rather than make all the boards, they bought a computer off the shelf, and basically off the shelf, and made that. But now, if you made Wizard Block again, you would have to get reprogramming and everything. Because you can't get a program out of it. At least that's what I'm told anyway. They also told us we couldn't get the program out of Capcom and stuff. Okay, next.
What's the next playfield?
Oh, regular playfields. Right now we have the wood and the plastics for Creature from the Black Lagoon. That'll be going to the router man probably 10 days from now, because he's finishing up the second run of KISS and doing the prick pointing, and from now on we're going to do prick pointing on as many of them as we can, top and bottom. And then after that will be Monster Bash, unless something else falls into place. Both Creature and Monster Bash are two things that, ones that need to be done. There's a lot of other ones. When I sat down and thought about this, about the play fields, I just arbitrarily picked a 3-year cycle. If I run one, probably be 3 years before we run it again, unless there's a lot of demand for it. We would, well, now I gotta get sidetracked. All of you understand what third-party rights means? Anybody who does not understand third-party rights, I'll explain it if you want, if you don't. Okay, third-party rights is, if you got a named person, TV program, television or something on it, I'm gonna use KISS. Okay, we just made the second run of KISS. My first run of KISS was made in 02 by Churchill Cabinet, which took about 8 months to get done. But they made a good product at that time. Now, we're doing KISS. We have to pay them royalties up front and then 10% royalty on everything we sell. So if I sell you a KISS playfield for $600, I'm sending 60 of that to them. And they keep track of it. They call me once a month. Two or three. We're supposed to do it every quarter, but it's usually every month they call and know what's going on. But now, we have bought rights, and conservatively we spent $100,000 last year. We bought Creature from the Black Lagoon, Monster Bash. That's from Universal Studios. That's $20,000. We got Elvira, Scared Stiff. That was I think that was 10 apiece. I think that was 20,000. KISS had a strange way of doing this. They wanted 24 samples of everything. Okay, well if you take 24 samples of play fields, I'm sending them about $18,000 in samples. And then they still want the 10%. So we renegotiated that. I won't give you the figures, but it's much less. Roadshow, we had to get Carlene Carter's okay to do roadshow. Had to pay for the use of her voice and picture. That was not a big one, but it was there. We bought Star Trek. We bought Star Wars, Star Trek Next Generation. We bought Twilight Zone. What else we bought? Georgie? That all of them?
Trying Dolly.
Who?
Dolly. Trying to get Dolly.
Dolly. Trying.
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton? She's a duck. Dolly Parton is the only one that wouldn't let us license.
How about 8 Ball and Henry Winkler?
Who?
8 Ball, Henry Winkler.
We haven't tried for that one.
You haven't tried.
Because that's not him. It's not him. That's not a licensed product. Mm-hmm. See, that's where third-party rights comes in. If it's just a registered trademark, now Williams, and that's what I'm going to say, Wayne tells people he owns all this. He does not. Williams still owns all registered trademarks for Bally and Williams. I have the rights to use them. I have a license to use Bally's name. And that's all Wayne has is a license to use Bally's name. So any of those things can be made. It's like Medieval Madness, all right? Wayne wants to make Medieval Madness. Fine, he can do that. Except I own the patents. I own the patents on the ramp. I own the patents on the ball trough. Any game that Williams or Bally made that's got the patented ball trough in, I should get a royalty, but I'll leave that alone. She's snickering again. No, I'm not saying anything against Wayne or about him or anything else that I wouldn't say to his face. If he was sitting here, I would say the same thing I just said, because I don't beat around the bush. I've done too well in business throughout my life. Like I say, we have 4 businesses, and we've done quite well, or I wouldn't be able to afford $300,000 to make a game. Now, back to the trademarks. Williams has the final say-so on any game or anything that is made. You have to submit one of the item to them, and they have to okay it. Roger Sharp is the person that okays it. If you make a new product, then they're really sticklers about that. If I wanted to take Creature, and I wanted to make a sweatshirt with Creature on it, one, I would have to get Williams okay, and I'd have to get Universal's okay. When we did, I gotta get this one right, we did Creature, Monster Bash. Monster Bash has the Frankenstein on the side of the head playing the guitar. Well, they now have a different artist, and they wanted us to change that. They wanted the head put on it. They wanted the logo changed, because now they're no longer Universal that way, they're Universal something else. And we hassled back and forth for 3 months on that. No money has changed. And finally, I got on the phone to one of the vice presidents, and I said, my daughter Kim has been in touch with you people. Our lawyer's been in touch. We've got our license. We want to make this original. We do not want to change things. We don't want to change the color. We don't want to change the logo on it or anything else. And finally, they agreed that we were doing it for collectors and things and not in a production, and they okayed it. Anybody else?
I'm assuming that...
Well, I talked to you yesterday about it.
Yeah, this is more broad. I'm assuming that if you get the board said okay for Kingpin,
yes,
that game will be farmed out, produced by somebody.
Yes, we won't make it. Right. Okay. It'll be made by a board house.
But there are plans to have that game produced.
Huh?
By somebody. There are plans to have that game produced by somebody.
We're leaning towards that, right.
Right. So if you can get that board set worked out, what's to stop you from doing another run of Big Bang? And are there any plans beyond Kingpin?
She's shaking her head no. You're voicing your breath. I'm not going to make any more machines.
Somebody else to do it like you're doing.
We would consider talking to somebody. They would have to be financially capable. Right now, the $820,000 I collected in advance payments, plus the $300 we put in, we're $1,000,001 right now to make 175 machines. Now, maybe we have gained some expertise, and maybe we have gained a little knowledge, could probably knock that figure down. Again, I'm gonna say something about Wayne. I don't know if any of you put your money in for Big Bang, or not Big Bang, but Monster Bash.
Medieval Madness.
Well, he's one of them. I got too many games floating around in my head. He's upped his price on that, because he already realizes he can't make it for that. It just don't fly when you're dealing on small percentages and small amounts. It just don't work. Yes?
From your experience making Big Bang tomorrow, what do you think the likelihood that he'll do?
I can't hear you.
What's the likelihood do you think that Wayne will finish making the machines he's promised?
Truthfully,
yeah.
I don't wish him any bad luck, but I doubt it. And I'm sure he'll see this video, and like I say, I won't say nothing about him, or I wouldn't say to his face. I've learned an awful lot of lessons in the 2 years. I've led a lot of people, not necessarily lead me astray. I've taken them on their word, and their word always don't turn out that they can do something. And especially when you get into small manufacturing things. We had a bunch of parts, zinc plated, black. When we got them back, they're all streaked. They still got chrome through them. We had a company make the ball trough. Okay, the ball trough's all nice and zinc plated. Except it's got some welding operations on it. They zinc plated all the parts, then welded it. Uh-huh. Okay, so then it had to be wire brushed off and either painted or redone. The brass trim that we have on Big Bang, we tried two different ways. We had those side rails made out of solid brass. We had them made out of steel, not stainless, but steel. And then plated and hard coated. We just took some more of them, two hold down our bars and four side rails.
Four sets.
Four sets. Back for the third time. Now they have to acid dip them, clean them off, send them out to a buffer, get them back, then they gotta be plated, then they gotta go somewhere else to have the hard coat put off. So we've got 2 weeks right there that we're not gonna have those parts, so we know we can't finish the machine in that timetable. Because we don't have the parts, we can't finish putting it on. Okay? Yes?
What's the spare parts situation with... What's the situation with spare parts for Big Bang Bar?
There will be parts.
Well, if you were saying you made 200 of all these parts, and there are right. 175 games out
well,
there...
Well, okay, 200. We knew that we could make, we thought, 182 games. So I ordered cabinets for 182 games. But all parts that we ordered 200 or 220, depending on what it was. Or if it was a double part, then we ordered double of that. So we will have spare parts. Playfields, we ran 225 or something like that. Side art, we did around 220, 230. So you always got, when you make something, there's always a plus factor of 10 or minus 10. If a company is set up to run something for you and they've got it going, they're going to run 10% here and get more money from you. Because it'll cost them next to nothing to run 10 more or something. But yet, if it's a difficult project, they might run 10% under. If you specify that you want a particular number of something, your estimate is more money. It's more money to make it. I've learned, see. It's been a learning year. Anybody else? There you go.
How about making some pinball machine kits for us collectors?
That's been suggested. Now I'm going to give Williams a big favor, a big plus. They had a very great concept on Pin Game 2000. A lot of people don't like Pin Game 2000. It's got its drawbacks, but the concept was great. They made the first game, then they made the second game, and they made 1,700 kits. I've got one sitting down in my booth down there. Okay, those kits sold for $2,200 to $2,400. But you can convert one machine to the other. Now I also have Wizard's Block. I can take that kit and put it into Wizard's Block and make Star Wars out of it, but I'd be one of the biggest damn fools in town because that Wizard's Block I turned down $25,000 for. Then, the next game, which is fun, which is Playboy that most people don't even know about. There is one Playboy machine on the 2000 series. I have that game also. So it could progressively could have went ahead. This is what I said about the computer before. Once this got past where it is, The statistics on the two games that they did make was 5,200 and 5,000. And the kits, which brought the total to 12,000. Now, 12,000 machines or kits or anything to Williams was a loser. Their company was geared on 35 to 40,000 units a year for break even. But the word, Pat Lawler said this one, when they ran 20,000 Adams family, one of the executives got up and said, well, we almost made money on this one. Almost made money on it. So the idea of kits, yes. It's been proposed before. Harry Williams, and somebody else. Maybe you could help me on the dates on this. When did they make the kits and the conversion kits? They made 301, they made Gamatron, 85, somewhere in there. They made three kits, and they sold for maybe $400 at a time. You got a play field, you got the side art, and the program, if there was one. And they sold quite a few of them. It went over somewhat. And one other thing, when he was talking up here before this afternoon about the fiberglass cabinets, Bally Williams also experimented with plastic play fields, and that didn't work. They made a few of them. There's still some floating around. They'll show up at a show, still in the crate, never been used. But they had trouble with them. Heat got to them, different things like that. They would sag and stuff, so that never went. I've experimented with other things, different kind of cabinets. We talked about this the other night. I took the wood like your tabletop here is made out of and had three cabinets made out of it. Makes some very good cabinets, heavier than hell, but it makes a very tough, durable cabinet. And you can have it made any color you want. We chose black. But you can hit it with a hammer and it don't break. You could thump that table with a hammer pretty hard and it wouldn't even make a dent hardly. And that would take care of, and what I was thinking about, some of you might have seen the pictures. I made a game called Pool Player. I made three of them. And that was back in 73. I think it was 73. We made those and then put side art and stuff on them. And I started to get some orders for it, and then the deal fell into place to buy Williams and all the parts and the tooling and everything. So they set in my collection room right now. Anybody else? Nobody else has got any questions?
I got one question.
Okay.
When you were naming off the different play fields you've done, Creature from Black Lagoon and Twilight Zone, there's in excess of 10,000 existing games to put those in. Whereas, like Monster Bash, there's less than 4,000.
It wears badly, though.
Huh?
It wears badly.
But it wears badly?
Okay. Part of our concept on that is we look at the total production of the game. I have the production figures for all the games. I look at that, and then I'm fairly knowledgeable from going to all the auctions and the shows and everything. I know what's around and what conditions and things is. So we look at that to see, is that something that's needed? People keep telling me Attack from Mars. Well, Attack from Mars is only like 3,500. We are doing side art and stuff for that right now. We have, I'm going to say, 10 different items in the trough right now to make. First of all, I got to get Big Bang Bar done. We're making Dragon Wings. We're making all 13 colors of the bumper caps. We're making Twilight. Attack from Mars. We're making two or three plastics and two play fields. That's nine, I can't think of the other one. But we're constantly looking for things. As we run out of stuff, we try to anticipate to order them before we run out of them, but it always don't work that way. We have over 1,000 items on our website. We have another 1,000 items or more that we could put on the website, but it would mean we'd have to make them. We have a policy with Kimberly, the daughter, set up. If we only have one or two of an item, whether it's complete assembly or regardless of what it is, we don't sell it. We leave it in the bin so we've got something to take apart. We have boxes and boxes of assemblies that we got from Williams. because they had people coming in off the street, so they always had a complete assembly to know how to do something. And we still have all those.
All these playfields that you were talking about, are they now being made by you? You're not
basically by me, yes.
You're not using a third party company to make them anymore.
I'm purchasing the wood, having it delivered. I buy the plastics from Foremost, or I make the plastics myself. Have somebody, because I got all the molds. I got all the molds that Williams Valley had, and some Capcom had, other things. Then we go through the whole procedure what I just told you. So when we finish it, I've started it and finished it, even though there's been subcontractors in between.
Right.
We have another thing that goes along with this. A lot of things have come up in the last couple of years about people making parts and bootleg parts and all that. Anybody that wants to make something, I'll be happy to listen to you. I cannot license you to go out and make something. I can have you as a manufacturer. All right, Creature from the Black Lagoon, the hologram. We've entered into an arrangement with the man that's making that. Now, we don't have any because the people that was printing it scratched the plate, so now they've got to make another plate. So we won't have Creature holograms. I thought I was going to have them come to the show. We had 20 of them on order. Can't get them, it'll be weeks yet. But back to the other thing. If you have an idea for something, if I think it's far-fetched, I might still give you the okay to make it and give you the okay to sell it and pay me a commission. That's not really licensed yet. It's a fine line in there where a license goes and where you're a manufactured rep. A lot of you have been buying Big Bang Bar shirts, towels, and different things. And that's not the whole line. Fred's taking care of that. That's an individual thing. The people who are doing that are Big Bang buyers, and they wanted to do something for the collector market. So they're making all of this stuff out of their own pocket. We're selling it, turning the money over to them. They are, the only thing that I will get out of that is they're making two custom jackets for my wife and myself. They'll be denim jackets, and they're gonna be highly embroidered, and it'll be similar to the jackets we have from the Riviera in Las Vegas. Anybody else?
You talked about you're still in limbo about Kingpin.
I've got to supply 300 playfields or plus, cabinets and all that. This man has to then go out, and he's going to start taking money in. I've had probably four people here at the show say they'll buy Kingpin. We've had, and one thing we came up with, I'll get back to the main track in a minute. Everyone who has bought a Kingpin, bought a Big Bang Bar and has their number will have a 2-week window to send half their money in to keep the same number so they got a match mirror. Most everyone thinks that's a good idea. I see heads going up and down, okay? All right. If we don't have the board, we can't do it. It's just simple as that. We'd have to go to a whole other system or something. I have access to the Alvin G system. I have boards in that. I have boxes and boxes of boards from that company, too. But then I'm mingling two companies together. I can't use Williams. I could use Williams. But there's a clause in my contract that I cannot make new machines. But that clause means I cannot make new Williams machines. I can make board and sell them to anybody I want to. The guys in Colorado who made Cabin Fever that was at Chicago, did any of you see that? The game that the man made for his daughter, cut the legs off and everything. Well, they flew out and spent a day with me, and they want to make 12 machines. And I agreed to supply them 12 of everything they need. Lo and behold, Wayne calls them up and tells them they can't do that. And they said, well, why can't we do that? Well, I'm going to give you a cease and desist. So I have to call Williams. Williams okays it that I can sell them the parts as long as I'm not making the game with the Williams parts. I can sell any of you people in here Williams parts. You come to our booth, you can buy Williams Valley parts. What you do with them after you got them makes no difference because then it's second party stuff. So there's a lot of ins and outs in all this. But our main concern right now, back to the boards, is getting the board that works. Yes.
Is there a kingpin anywhere in commercial setting where someone can play that? Or are they just in private homes?
One supposedly went through U.S., not U.S. auction, the other auction company a couple years ago. They had a picture of it on their flyer. I've never found anybody that's seen or had that machine sold.
And the other six, they're not in any kind of commercial setting?
There's only five of them.
Five other ones?
One of them's here in Dallas.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
One of them's about 10 miles from here.
Huh?
Is it ever available?
There's one of them about 10 miles from here.
Right, I've been out to his house and played it.
Who owns that?
Right.
He's a very under-the-radar collector. He wants to stay that way.
I asked him yesterday, I said, if we don't get all this going, can I borrow your machine? We'd like to take it apart so we can measure everything. No, I don't think so.
It's sitting right next to an.
Huh?
It's sitting right next to an original Big Bang bar. He's got quite.
Right, I know. I played both of them.
Yeah.
We went out to his house. He got a very nice house.
Yeah, yeah. He's a hell of a nice guy. He's a hell of a person.
Anybody else? Thank you very much.